Welcome into episode 136 of the Courtside Crossover with Chris Partee. Got my man, Sean Beckwith, in the house with me again. Sean, what's going on, brother?
Not much. Good to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. Always good to have you. So we're down to the NBA conference final. You know, we also call it the NBA's Final Four. We'll get into that. Also want to talk to you. I just saw this thing where there's a, I don't know if you saw this, dude named Bill Spooner. He's a former NBA official of 32 years. He calls Chris Paul one of the biggest assholes he's ever come across in the NBA. I'll get your thoughts on that too. And then also all this talk that we've been hearing the past, I guess, week or two now about the Lakers and JJ Redick and just their coaching search in general. But let's get into the conference finals first. So we just recently, I guess that was Sunday, we saw the Denver Nuggets completely collapse against the Minnesota Timberwolves, which caused me a whole bunch of mental anguish and grief and cajoling and poking and prodding from Timberwolves fans. But I deserved it because I guess I deserved it. I don't know if I deserved it, but, you know, I was wrong about them. Dude, what happened to the Nuggets? I'm just 20-point lead in game seven. You know, it was kind of early. I never really trust big leads in the NBA anymore, especially, you know, since this culture of everyone shooting threes has come in the last, I guess, 10 years or so. Leads evaporate, you know, at the drop of a hat. You know what I mean? So I never really trust those early leads, you know, first quarter, second quarter, up 20, especially in playoff games. I'm like, teams are usually going to make a run. What happened to the Nuggets, man?
I think with the Nuggets, it was a little bit of Mike Malone doing a little bit of a Thibodeau impression.
And when we saw what happened to them.
He sticks to his guy. He plays him a ton. And they didn't really have anybody. I mean, they were only seven deep, honestly. And so game seven, Minnesota was younger, more athletic. And I think that's what it would be. The Nuggets weren't deep enough, and like Bruce Brown last year was a big cog for them, and it seemed like they had other pieces that they kind of bring off the bench and rely on. And this year, it seemed like it was just Joker, and then Murray whenever he was healthy or motivated. I'm not too sure what kind of
healthy or motivated. That's a good way to put it. I don't see why he wouldn't be motivated, but, you know, sometimes I guess after you win that championship, you know, that hunger kind of, you know what, that fire maybe dies down a little bit. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if it's motivation or if he just can't reach back like the way he wants to. I mean, last year he was really good in the playoffs, but I just don't think this year he could. I mean, I know he was injured. Everybody's injured, but it seems when he's injured, it's a little more noticeable than with some of these other guys who can play through it. And no knock on him. It's just, you know, just the way it goes, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean,
also,
go ahead.
No, I was that we should shout the Timberwolves too, because they play great and their defense is awesome.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I'm definitely going to get to the Timberwolves, but I mean, you know, Jamal Murray showed flashes, you know, in the first round and even in the series, you know, especially those three games that they won in a row to get back into the series when they were down 0-2 Denver. He showed flashes there, but then there was other times when he just disappeared. And specifically speaking of game seven, Michael Porter Jr. has got to give you more than what, 7 points, 9 points, whatever he scored. I mean, he kind of disappeared in most of this series, in my opinion. He had a couple games there, but if he's going to be, you know, he's supposed to be their number three guy. Your number three guy's got to give you more than 7 points in a big game seven, right?
Yeah, I think it was more noticeable in the series. I mean, he played good against the Lakers, played well against the Lakers, noticeable then.
It's the Lakers, though.
Yeah, it's the Lakers, though, for sure. They don't have the defense that the Minnesota can throw at you. And I just think that I don't think that Murray or Jokic, they may have got comfortable there for a little bit in that series, but the way they lost game six was like,
oh God,
concerning. Like, you lose by 45, just because, like, it's either you guys no-showed or Minnesota is really good and they just, you know, kind of let you get away with a couple there. So, yeah, I think that Porter Jr., it's just a matter of, like, if Jokic and Murray aren't going, then the rest of the team kind of struggles to go. And I mean, I think that's kind of what happened because you cut off the head of the snake. And Jokic's obviously played well, but, you know, there's only so much he can do when Murray is inconsistent. And then, as you said, MPJ also is as well.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that really stood out to me in game seven is the Nuggets look tired, especially Jokic. There was more than one time when he was, you know, hands on knees, and like he just looked, especially in the second half, he just looked exhausted, you know. And there were times when, you know, he's putting up threes, or even when he's down low bumping and banging with Rudy and Kat, it just looked like he was putting everything he had into those moves. And some of those shots that usually fall, they just weren't falling.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, that's also Malone played him a ton of minutes that's in the series. And they were harping on all game seven with how much he was playing. And I also think that's like another roster construction thing with Denver. Like they didn't really have a backup center last year, you know?
Yeah.
And even this series, like, it's not even so much a backup center. It's just another big guy to play right next to Jokic, you know? You can play a center and a big. I mean, that's what Minnesota does all the time. And you know, we know Jokic can shoot outside if he wants to, so the spacing would still theoretically be there. It just, the roster construction was not great. I mean, DeAndre Jordan was still on the team, so I mean, that tells you all you need to know about their depth.
So I think we've talked about this before. I'm sure we have. It is amazing to me how DeAndre Jordan still keeps a job in the NBA. I mean, he don't touch the court. I mean, I'm sure he's a good locker room guy. But then you look at a guy like Dwight Howard, who the NBA's pretty much told him, we're done with you. But in my opinion, he always has been, obviously, and still is. To me, I think he'd be a better option than, because he could actually give you something than over DeAndre Jordan. But obviously, you know, a lot of people don't like him for whatever reason. He just can't get a sniff anymore in the NBA. For the last couple of years, he's been campaigning. He's been playing in Taiwan, you know, since last year. He just can't get a sniff in the NBA anymore. But it's just amazing that DeAndre Jordan sticks around. It's crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's off-court reasons why Dwight's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And I also think Dwight's more of a headache. I mean, DeAndre Jordan has obviously been a great locker room guy since going back to the Clippers days. And
yeah.
Even when he went to Brooklyn with KD and Kyrie as well, like, you know, like he's some kind of big three type thing, which was a joke at the time.
Yeah.
But he's still, for whatever reason, he was on Team USA, I believe. So for whatever reason, you know, he's in with those guys. And once you're part of that little, I don't know.
He's in the clique.
Yeah, in the clique, you're good.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
But
yeah. And you know what? It's a shame, but that's what it comes down to a lot of times. If you're in the clique, it's like high school, right?
But if you want to pivot to Minnesota now, I would say Kat, I mean, I hate everything he does. Everything he does bothers me. Even when he makes threes, his little smile. It's just, but he played really well. And if you look at him coming back from that meniscus stuff, like, that's what you want from a guy compared to, say, Embiid, who, you know, came back and was just laboring and almost looked like his leg was going to fall off. So, shout out to Kat, shout out to Ant, shout out to Conley, and, I mean, reluctantly, you know, Rudy Gobert had his moments. Nas Reed really was phenomenal and sixth man of the year. I mean,
well, Nas Reed was the X factor in that game seven.
Yeah, he flipped
like that late. He flipped that late series. In that game.
In game two, they were without Rudy, and they blew the doors off Denver in Denver. You know, cause the way he played, and played great in game seven as well. I mean, just it seems like he's one of those guys right now. And you leave him a second for a three, it's like he shouldn't be able to shoot it at that rate or that clip, and he does. So nothing you can do, especially with him and Kat shooting like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it. the Nuggets definitely needed another. I mean, they needed a lot, obviously, but another big body would have definitely helped, you know, to deal with those three big bodies, especially with the two big bodies over there with Kat and Naz Reid that can actually shoot it from, you know, outside the paint. Because, you know, Rudy, you don't have to worry about him so much for scoring. But the other two, you know, they can, bang with you down low. I feel like sometimes Kat should do it more, but, you know, whatever he's doing is working for him. But he can also step out and shoot the three. I think he shot it at 40% this season. It's hard to contend with that. A guy that's 7 foot, but, you know, he's not a slender, thin 7 foot like Rudy. He's a thick, like he's a big guy. You know what I mean? Like he's got some size on him at 7 feet, but can also go outside like that. And then you add Anthony Edwards to the mix and everything that he's done this season and kind of taking the reins there as, you know, the lead guy in Minnesota. You know, I can say, we talked about this. I wrote about it months ago. I was not big on, I just didn't believe it yet. You know, I needed to see it. And, they, you know, I've seen it. They made it to the conference finals. So, you know, shout out to the Minnesota Timberwolves. I was wrong. I hope you all are happy. Enjoy this while it lasts because, you know, these things never last long. So enjoy it while it lasts. But yeah. And I've always been big on Anthony Edwards. It was just the other two I weren't really sold on. You know what I mean? Like it was Kat. I didn't know what you were going to get from him. And then he got hurt. And then it was like, all right, we don't even know if he's going to come back. But obviously he did. And with Rudy, for years now, we've seen him just get. And even in this series, we saw Joker just abuse him. But I mean, he did. It was a lot of the series. He just abused Rudy, especially after those first two games where the Nuggets, I just don't know. They just kind of sleptwalked through the first two games. Maybe they underestimated Minnesota like I did. I have no idea. But, yeah, shout out to Minnesota. They handled their business. Now they got to face the Mavericks in the conference finals.
But, yeah. Yeah. I think this series will be, I don't know. The Mavericks, if we talk about defense, like those perimeter guys were the way they're hounding Murray and anybody who's touching the ball for Denver, like Kyrie and Luka are going to be like, Luka, first off, he's going to complain to the refs to like a whole different level with the way the Minnesota plays defense. Like it's not
even he does that anyway.
It's one of those things like you don't think he can be more annoying, but he's going to be insufferable this series because of the way that they get up under your skin. I like Minnesota again. When we spoke last, I said maybe Minnesota could give Denver 7. You told me I was crazy. You told me, you know, obviously you took some Nuggets. But the way they're playing, shooting the ball, it's just really impressive. And with Ant too, like I was my impression with Ant, like earlier this year he missed tip of a home game because he was playing video games at his house. It's like okay, like we're gonna trust this guy to lead somebody, you know, to the conference finals and beyond. And I mean, he's done that. I mean, I guess you mix up that is he immature or is he just so competitive that he kind of comes off as an ass, you know? it might be the latter. You know, he was chirping with KCP, chirping with Jokic. He was, you know, scoffing at Aaron Gordon after Aaron Gordon had a good game. So, I mean, I think the guy's just. He's just competitive, and he's kind of a knucklehead at the same time.
Yeah,
I don't know. He's just kind of charismatic too because of that. You see, you think he's kind of aloof, and then the next quarter he's gutting guys at midcourt, and you're just like, okay, well, this is happening.
Yeah, yeah. Edwards is man, he's different, right? He's just a different kind of dude. It seems like. You know what I mean? Like he definitely, you mentioned charismatic, and that's the word that keeps getting tossed around. He has the charisma. I mean, now for me, you know, he's got to stay on this path a little bit longer, like, and continue improving, but he feels like a guy that could actually take over that mantle of being like, you know, as they like to say, the face of the league, you know, because He's not just a guy that's like Jokic that just wants to play and doesn't want the you know, the outside attention. It feels like he wants that outside attention and he welcomes it, right?
Yeah, he welcomes it, and he just has that look about him. It's like, oh, we the kind of, you know, we're not gonna call him Jordan, but like he's like a McGrady or a Vince Carter or something. Like that's the stage he's at now in my mind. Like, oh, this guy could theoretically, as you said, like be a face of the league. And if he continues this path, like I think he'll get there. And like that was the difference between him and Murray this series. Like when Murray was trying to get to the, like go to that level, and it seemed like anytime Ant wanted to, with an exception, you know, with the, you know, a game here or there, he was getting to that level anytime he wanted to. And that's, you know, he was a big reason why they won the series as well. And like I think Dallas is going to have, like, who's going to guard him for Dallas? I don't understand. So I think Dallas is in for a really tough time, because that OKC team is just too young.
Yeah,
I mean, the stuff that works in the regular season, we find out with some of these young teams, once they hit the postseason, they kind of figure out, oh, this is not going to work. Which is why Josh Giddey didn't play really. And
that's how I felt about OKC. I was like, you know, I figured they get out of the first round. But I'm like, I don't know if, because we don't see young teams, like teams this young. I think their average age is like 24 or 25, like average age. Like they don't really have a lot of any veterans, like guys that have been around and have been through these long postseason, you know, and these playoff battles and things like that. So these young teams, we see them, they don't make deep runs a lot of times. You know, it takes a couple years for them to be together, and then you may see them, you know, get to that point. But yeah, I just didn't think they were going to, I was just weary about them getting out of the second round. I mean, I saw that they would face Dallas, I'm like, they got a chance, but I just don't know. Cause Dallas, you know, Dallas is fairly young too, but you do have a guy like Kyrie, and you know, even with Luka, he led them there to the conference finals a couple years ago where they lost to the Warriors. So they got some guys that have kind of been through some battles. And we know about Kyrie. He was in, you know, however many finals in a row with LeBron, and they won one. So, you know, he's got that experience too. So that, you know, some people don't think experience matters, but I've always been a proponent of, I think experience matters, especially when you have a team full of young guys like you do in OKC and you just haven't been there yet.
Yeah, for sure. With OKC, I mean, SGA knows what he's doing out there, obviously.
Well, obviously, yeah.
J-Dub, like, had his moments. I think, you know, he kind of was hit or miss there a little bit. You want to see a little more consistency out of him. And I think with Chet, too, Chet is like, you know, this is his first year in the league, and he's already in the playoffs and playing
big
role. Like, you know, this is a net positive for OKC in my mind this year. But they do have some questions going forward as far as, you know, like what to do with Giddey. Giddey, in my mind, is a guy who, like, maybe, you know, he should be a kind of primary ball handler. Like, I know you love to have, you know, Phoenix with a point guard. Like, I think a guy like Giddey over there would be nice. Give him the ball, let him distribute. Like, that's the kind of role I think he ultimately, if he's going to play in the league a long time, is going to have to do, because it doesn't seem like the shooting is coming along. So,
yeah.
Yeah, with OKC, yeah, I just think it was, I mean, Dallas. That was just as you said, this is more of a veteran gut out kind of series win for them. They came back in a few of those games. OKC couldn't shut the door a couple times, and you know, Luka even semi hobbled was able to affect the game, and Kyrie didn't score 35 for them to win. So good on Dallas. I just think Dallas to me right now is really like maximizing the potential of the roster right now. Luka can play better, but definitely, I don't know if he will, if he's going to be injured, you know?
And that's the thing, you know, even Luka is banged up. So, you know, they were able to get past a young Thunder team, but like you said, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough against the Timberwolves, you know, and primarily because of that perimeter defense, because they're, when you got a dude like Anthony Edwards out there who takes on that challenge, you know, he wants to go guard the other team's, you know, first or second best guy, or switch off on him, whatever it is. But he wants that challenge. But then he also wants to come back and try to give you 30 on the other end. Now, you know, he's still young himself. So We'll see how many years that lasts, because, you know, we know how that goes. You know, you got guys that are two-way players, you know, but, you know, once you start getting closer to that age of 30, you know, something has to give, right? You know, you can't do it all the time. It just becomes a lot harder. But for now, he's good with that. And, you know, he's become one of the best two-way guards in the league. But then you got veterans around him. He's young, but you got veterans around him, which is the key there that OKC didn't have.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think with Minnesota too, like, yeah, it's Ant is like, he might be the one of the youngest guys on the roster, and then you surround him with guys like Conley and Gobert and Reed and Cat, like, we always harp on him, and sometimes he acts like he's 23, but he's been in the league for a long time now, and
he's like 28 or something like that, 27.
Yeah, for sure. So, like, they're like Minnesota. That team to me was a little more due than OKC. When we talk about roster depth and veterans and makeup like that, so I think that, and that's why I think in this conference finals, especially, there's no daunting task here. You know, you're not facing LeBron, you're not facing Steph, you're facing Dallas, who hasn't gone to the finals with Luka yet. So, like, this Final Four to me is a blast. Maybe sans Boston, but, like, we're going to get a new champion outside of, last time we were on here, it was like, oh, it's LeBron. It's been LeBron, Curry, Kawhi, Giannis, or Jokic for the past almost like a decade, and now we're all those guys are gone, and so this finals, I think, is gonna be a lot of fun. Whoever ends up being,
yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like we're going through a changing of the guard. I talked about that not too long ago. It feels like the older guard, you know, like you just mentioned, the LeBrons, the Stephs. Kevin Durant in there. Like, these older guys that are still pretty good. Like, you know, Steph's still good. LeBron's still pretty good. You know, he's very good. Kevin Durant is still good. But they're not able to get their teams to this point anymore consistently. I mean, it's been two years now since the Warriors were in the, you know, finals or had a deep run. Last year couldn't get it done. This year couldn't get it done. They're still trying to figure things out to try to prolong it, because, you know, Steph probably has another 3 to 5 years left. But you can't say the same really for Draymond or Klay. So they're going to have to rebuild around him if they want to get back into actually competing for titles and not just, you know, either being in the play-in or barely making the playoffs or going out in the first round, stuff like that. But, you know, the old guard is kind of like, you know, they're moving along. And now we got, like you say, outside of Boston, who's been there, but even their main guys are still fairly young. You know what I mean? Tatum and Brown, it's been 7 years they've been together, but they're still, you know, neither one of them is even 30 yet. I think they're, you know, 27, 26, somewhere around there. But, you know, because guys come into the league so young now, you're 25, 26, you've been in the league almost 10 years, it feels like. But, you know, let's jump over to the other side with the Pacers and the Celtics first. Are you surprised at all that the Knicks totally blew this whole thing? I'm not. And that's not just because I'm a Pacer fan, you know, been a Pacer fan for years. Reggie Miller's my guy. It's not because of that. It's because it's the Knicks. They always figure out a way to screw something up. They just always do. They're like the Cowboys in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, regardless, I mean, and then it's with the Knicks this year, you just saw it coming for a while. It's just like, oh, this is not sustainable. Everybody kept saying it. We kept yelling to Tibbs, hey man, you know, you can't keep playing you guys these minutes. You can't do it. Like, maybe play some other guys and get to the playoffs. And he like ratchets it up to like a different level to where they're playing so many minutes and guys are really dropping off.
Yeah.
Look at the walking wounded out. They got Hart and Anunoby out there playing with like significant injuries and are half of themselves and getting run out of the building in MSG by a Pacers team that, like, I mean, you might like. I mean, I was kind of high on them earlier in the year. I don't know how high I am on them, even though they're in the Eastern Conference Finals. But, like,
yeah,
if the Knicks were healthy, they smash the Pacers. But Tom Thibodeau can't let single games go ever, and so that's why we get to where we got to.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and
I think it lost those last two games. By the way, yeah.
Say that again.
Go ahead.
No. What'd you say?
The last two games in that series weren't even really competitive. You know.
Yeah, they really weren't. They really weren't. And you know, even when the Pacers were down in this series, you know, because it's the Knicks, and I know the history. No matter who, you know, what era it is, I know the history of the Knicks and Pacers, and I just know the Knicks. I wasn't super worried. I still thought the Pacers could get it to 7, even when they were down in this series, and it felt like, okay, they're just done. Well, they were down 2-0, I believe. It just felt like everybody else thought they were done. Everyone in New York knew they were done. Like, everyone in New York just was like, yeah, this is over. I was like, nah, not necessarily. I actually have a buddy, good buddy, for years. He's not from New York, but he's a Knicks fan. And we always go back and forth whenever the Knicks and Pacers play. So, you know, he's talking his crap. And I'm just like, all right, that's cool. Just, dude, you do realize it's still the New York Knicks, right? And, you know, a week later, here we go, game 7. And, you know, the rest is history now. The rest is history. How do you think they're going to do with Boston, though? Realistically, I mean, to me, it's like Indiana's just kind of happy to be here. Boston, I don't feel like Boston... They shouldn't lose it. It depends on Porzingis as well, but this series really shouldn't go past 5 games, but I have a feeling that Boston will let it go to 6. Honestly, I do.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I hate to hate on your Pacers, but they're playing against a team that has depth now and is rested. And I know Porzingis isn't playing, but like this is a different basketball. Whatever the Knicks were doing was just pure heart, pure grind, and it was survived. Now they're actually going to play a team that like has rotations and isn't just relying on Jalen Brunson and you know and Josh Hart. So I think you'll see it's going to be a shock season for the Pacers. I think because. They were just going up against a team that, like, really outside of 2 or 3 guys, wasn't really looking. You know, like this Boston team, everybody's shooting, everybody's scoring, everybody's moving. Like when they're playing well, and so I think Indiana's gonna have their hands full with it, just because. I think also is extremely motivated because of the narrative around them, and the funny narrative around them. Is even if they win this year, I think people will still kind of be like, oh yeah, but like who'd they beat? And so, I mean,
yeah, that and that happens often, but I seriously think now, even with me being a Pacers fan, I don't expect them to win this series. I don't. I'm not one of those fans. I don't expect them. I do expect them to win. I don't expect them to get swept, though, honestly, even though it's going to be a whole different challenge. I expect them to win at least a game. And based on what I know about Boston and what we've seen from them just over the years during their run, they will let teams hang around. Teams that should not hang around, they will let them hang around. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to go 7, but I think the Pacers may luck up and win 2 games.
Yeah, no, I can see that happening.
I can see that happening. It's Boston.
Yeah, and they've kind of just seeded a game these past 2 series that they really you know shouldn't have lost.
They should, yeah.
But they probably should have swept both those teams. So, I think they'll drop 1 or 2. But Indy is just unless Halliburton. Like find some kind of consistency in his game is going to go for, you know, 27 and 12 a night. Like there, it's not going to be, it's going to be tougher for the Pacers to win for sure. So
now, what I think would be more surprising to most people is if Indiana is able to get a split in the first 2 games.
Yeah, but
that's what they need to do. Honestly, obviously, anytime you're on the road, you need to get a split, but. I don't think most people expect them to get that split. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, Miami had a split with them, and they took one in Boston. But, I just think that this isn't going to be – unfortunately, I hope it's a good series.
Yeah.
But I think most people will be watching Minnesota and Dallas because those games
– of course.
Wild, but
– One aspect of this that I think could be a really big factor that not a lot of folks are really going to look at and pay attention to is coaching. I think, especially if some of these games are close, it's going to come down to your boy Mazzulla and I'm blanking right now.
Rick Carlisle.
Because Rick Carlisle, I mean, he's been a coach forever now in the NBA, right? So, and he's got experience, won a championship. I've always thought he was a very good coach. He always seems to do, like, he does more with less, it feels like, a lot of time with a lot of his teams. You know what I mean? He does more with less, or he does the most he can with not the most talent all the time. We saw that when they won the championship with the Mavericks, right? Back in 2011, so, or 2010, 2011, whatever it was. So I feel like the coaching is going to be a big factor in close games, especially in this series. And if I got to pick one, I trust Carlisle far more than I trust Mazzulla in those situations. I just do.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's the one area of the series where I think Indy has the advantage. I mean, albeit slightly, because they don't play defense, and that's an idea that's on Carlisle as well. But I do think that Indy will find a way to score against Boston just because Carlisle, you know, finds a way to score against everybody. So I do think that these games will be a little more high scoring than we think. But I just think once the Celtics kind of get rolling, it's so easy to score on Indy that they'll figure it out. And, you know, Jaylen Brown, they don't have anybody to guard Jaylen Brown or Tatum. So, I mean, I guess Siakam, but, you know, it's either or, you know, Tatum or Brown. And so the rest of the guys are just going to eat. And
when you don't have individual matchup like that, that's where, you know, the whole aspect of team defense comes into play. And, you know, while the Pacers are not known as a defensive team, we've seen in these playoffs and especially against the Knicks. Now, we can attribute that to attrition, like we talked about, off the podcast with the Knicks. But the Pacers got stops when they needed to get stops. You know what I mean? Like in winning championships, I think, you know, you don't always have to be especially in this era of the NBA. The NBA is all about scoring now. You know, it's great to have a defense like Minnesota, but I don't think you necessarily have to. But you need to be able to get stops in critical moments when you need to get stops. You know, you're never going to, like, it's rare where you're going to shut teams down for a 7-game series and have them average, you know, 100 points or less in this era just because the pace of the game, the spacing, all these different, you know, aspects that go into the game now that are different from the 90s and even the early 2000s that make this a much more prolific scoring league. But when you can, if you can figure out a way to get stops just when you need to get stops, you know, which is ideally late in the first half or, you know, late in the fourth quarter, especially when the game is close. I feel like, you know, when you have a coach like Rick Carlisle, you can get those things done. And I feel like that's what the Pacers did, especially against the Knicks.
Yeah, I'm sure Carlisle's got some junk in his back pocket that he's going to throw at Boston, you know, in those late game situations for sure. TJ McConnell and Peyton Pritchard are like the same guy. You know, you start looking at matchups like Nesmith versus Tatum or Brown. Halliburton doesn't guard anybody. That's the thing, is Halliburton can't be out there and be invisible on the other side of the court this series because they need him against those three perimeter Boston players. So he can't be just a sieve out there letting them, you know, get where they want in the half court. And that's kind of, I mean, they figured it out against the Knicks, but really, like, who was handling the ball for the Knicks? It was like Jalen Brunson, you know, on one leg, and then Hart or DiVincenzo, and that was it. So, I mean, maybe McBride a bit, but
yeah,
like, I just think that you're going to have Halliburton is going to be tested. He won't be able to hide this series at all, and I think that's where it's going to be hard for Indy to do things. And then when you get, I think that would be my key there.
In that aspect, in this era of the NBA, I don't really worry about that, honestly, as much as, you know, it's out there a lot of times as far as when it comes to some of these point guards not playing defense, because name a few point guards in this era that are really good on ball defenders like that. It's not a lot of them. You got Drew Holiday and who else? I mean, Marcus Smart, obviously not in the playoffs, but I mean, like, name the point guards now who really get out there and defend like that. There's not a lot of them. So I don't really necessarily worry about that. Again, team defense. Now, you can't necessarily, you're not, like you say, you're not going to be necessarily able to hide Halliburton in this series. But again, the way they can score now, obviously, if they get into one of these funks where Boston is just, you know, locking them down, they can't score, then they're in trouble because the Pacers need to, you know, close to 120 points a game. That's almost what they need to do every night. And they're not going to average 120 against Boston. I don't see that. But, you know, if they can't be around 110 every night, they might not be in many of these games, in my opinion. But I don't worry too much about the point guard and Halliburton because there's not a lot of point guards in this league anymore that are just lockup defenders. And not a lot of people in general who are lockup defenders because, you know, the rules don't really allow for you to do that too much anymore anyway. You have a few teams like, you know, obviously Boston's been a pretty good defensive team for a few years, and then you got Minnesota, but that's the team. You know, that's a team defense there. I wouldn't necessarily call Tatum a lockdown defender. He's decent, right? But not a lockdown defender. Brown's pretty good defensively. But, you know, Drew Holiday is probably their best on-ball defender, but he's getting older, right? I don't think he's what he was even 3 years ago when he was with Milwaukee and they won it.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that. Like Drew Holiday's going to play good defense. He's not going to gamble. Boston plays great team defense on their own, but I think you're kind of understanding Tatum and Brown. Like they're good defensively. Like they work hard.
I'm not saying they're not good, but I'm talking about like lockdown defenders. Like there's not a lot of those in the league anymore. They're just not. You get some guys here and there, but I just don't view the league like that anymore.
I mean, there's a few of them. Minnesota has two. McDaniels was wild. Herb Jones or New Orleans is really good. I just think it's just so glaring when guys do play defense. You're like, and maybe that's what it is. If guys are actually playing defense, you think they're locked down. When in reality, like, we haven't seen someone like Gary Payton, and it's really since Gary Payton. So,
Even Jason Kidd to an extent. I mean, like, Jason Kidd was a really good defender on ball back in the day. Like, a lot of the, like, I just, you know, even you look at a guy like Rudy Gobert, and we talk about the three, four, whatever it is, Defensive Player of the Year awards. But I mean, realistically, he's a better help defender than he is, like, actually, like, when it comes to centers, I guess you could say. Because, I mean, he gets abused sometimes. He just does. Like, he's a better help defender because he comes from the weak side a lot of times against these blocks. So, I just, you know. Now, Wimby may be a little bit different, you know, because he's even a little bit taller and longer than Rudy is. And we saw him this year have games where he had, like, 7 blocks multiple games and things like that. But, yeah, I just don't view defense in the same way as far as the league goes today because, you know. To me, a lockdown defender is, you know, if you're a lockdown defender, you're holding a guy to not scoring or barely scoring or a low shooting percentage. You got guys, they call guys lockdown defenders, but then you look up and the guy they primarily guard is still gave him 25. It's like, to me, that's not a lockdown defender. Like, a lockdown defender is like, I'm just old school like that. Like, I just don't view it like that because the league is so different now. That's just how I look at it.
I would agree with that. I also counter that with, like, the refs are kind of calling the game as if it was old school these playoffs.
In the playoffs, they have been. They have been. They're
letting a lot of contact go, and that's why I think you're seeing, like, the teams who have advanced, like, because they're being able to be physical. I think that just in the playoffs, they just let you get away with more physicality.
And I think in general,
Boston's probably the more physical. Physical team between them and the Pacers, and
what it usually
comes down to, and we'll see how it goes. Boston. I will say this about Boston because I've been kind of reluctantly giving them praise, but they've done what they wanted, what they needed to do.
Reluctantly,
they seem like they're pretty locked in, even without Porzingis. And you know, if they can get through this series in 5 or even 6. I think Dallas, Minnesota could probably go 7 just because it's so weird to me. I do think that one will be a longer series. But if Boston can get through the series in in relatively quick pace, then I think they'll be really wet rested, and Porzingis will probably be ready for the finals. So they really could not have set up better for them.
Yeah, it's definitely set up for them, and you know, I just think, you know, just over looking at the overall picture, if Boston doesn't, if they don't win it this year, I think it's a disappointing season for them. I really do. I mean, they've been on the doorstep of actually winning. They got to the championship 2 years ago, lost to the Warriors, but they've been on the cusp of breaking through and winning for years now, you know, 5 years, whatever it is, 5-6 years. So I think this is their year that they actually win it, or it needs to be.
Yeah, I would agree. And like with Boston too, like this iteration of Boston with Brown Tatum has been around for so long.
Yeah.
That it seems that, you know, we don't realize how young these guys still are, but I just don't know if that's like these stretches, these teams as constructed, they don't really last beyond the Warriors are kind of the exception. Most of the teams after 7, 8, 10 year runs, like as you said, if they don't win the title this year, Boston's going to have to figure something out because people are going to get restless and be like, what's going on? Why aren't we winning?
Yeah.
And like, you know, that probably come in the form of firing Joe Mazz, but that's.
I mean, yeah, you know,
it'll be disappointing because they should be the odds on favorite. And I haven't checked Vegas, but I'm pretty sure they probably are. Them or be my guess, Minnesota, yeah. But I assume it's probably Boston.
It's still Boston as far as I know. But yeah, I just think, yeah, this has to be the year because, you know, there's no transcendent superstar standing in their way. I'll put it like that. Like there's no LeBron in the way. There's no Steph Curry. There's no Kevin Durant. Not that Minnesota's not good and not that Anthony Edwards isn't great, but he's not there yet. He's still very young. I'm not, you know me, I'm not someone to just heap all this praise on someone after, you know, one great season. Like show me for a couple years and then we'll talk about that. He's getting there. He's, you know, he's climbing to that plateau, you know, climbing to that peak, but he's not there yet. Obviously the Pacers don't have one of those guys. I love Halliburton, but he's not one of those guys yet. And then you got the Mavs, you got Luka, but he's kind of banged up. And then you got Kyrie, but you know, I wouldn't put them on the level of Curry and LeBron when they were winning championships. I wouldn't put those guys at that level.
Yeah. With Luka, to me, when we talk about players left in these playoffs,
he's a superstar. Don't get me wrong, but you know,
he was the only one to finish in the MVP voting. Right. Is that correct? I think that was, I mean, he was the only one left.
So he was
in the MVP finalists.
I think he finished third.
Yeah, and like honestly, he didn't. He's obviously hurt up a little. He's hurt a little bit, but man, it's sort of perfect for Boston overall. But also, it's looking pretty juicy for Dallas too. Like Luka, if you're going to get to this level where we all kind of thought he would get to, you know, according to his numbers and like the stats he puts up, like this should be a time where he should take over this conference finals with Minnesota and go for, you know, 30 or maybe not even go 30, but like just control the entire series. If he's a player that we thought he was going to be. And this is kind of like, he's also been in the league for a while now too. And
yeah,
not getting any younger here. So as you said, there's no transcendent superstar left. Like you don't have to wrestle LeBron. You don't have to wrestle with Steph, no Jokic. This is it. So
I think
if you want to take over, go for it.
I would say Luka is the closest, and he just hasn't quite broken through to be that yet. I mean, Luka's great, obviously, but you know, it's been like, you know, over the last like 4 years now, he's been, you know, coming into the season, most people thought he would win MVP at least two to three of those years, and he hasn't done it. And he's been great, you know. It's really honestly, MVP kind of comes down to a preference of the voters. Let's just be honest. That's what it comes down to. It's a preference of the voters. You know, he probably could have won. Hell, Shea had a really good case for it this year. But I think, honestly, with Shea, since it was his first year in the conversation, I didn't think he would win it just because we know how the voters are. Jokic has been around for years now. some of them probably thought he should have won it last year and won three in a row, but Embiid got it because Embiid campaigned for it for 3 years and he finally got it after complaining all the time about it. But yeah, you know, so I think Luka is probably the closest we have to like one of those just overall best in the world players that's still left in it. But again, with him banged up like this, I don't know how much that's going to hinder him, because it felt like it kind of, his injury kind of hampered him in the in this last series, you know, even if it's just a little bit. But so, yeah, we'll see what happens there. I want to ask you real quick about the Lakers, and what do you think about all this nonsense with JJ Redick? And we know him and LeBron, they have a podcast now. So none of this talk actually surprised me when it came out a little while back after, you know, after they got eliminated. Can you really see JJ Redick? Now, they still haven't made a decision. LeBron recently, I believe I heard he came out and said that he knows nothing about this. He hasn't talked to the Lakers about JJ Redick. I don't believe any of that, honestly. And obviously, I don't think you'd believe it either. But just what are your thoughts on it?
Well, LeBron stopped lying to us, one. And two, if JJ Redick takes that job, it's just going to like, it's going to go like when LeBron added Wade to the Cavaliers and discarded him halfway through the season. I don't think
like JJ that, Redick, huh?
Yeah. I think JJ Redick is, you know, might be a good coach. At some point, you know, maybe he seems like a smart guy. Obviously knows XOs within the league forever, and obviously, you know, knows how to play the politics of whatever he's doing, because he rose in the ranks of ESPN immediately, and now he's, you know, allegedly in the running for the Lakers job. But this is not the job for a first-time coach. We saw Steve Nash in Brooklyn with that like team, and that went awful for him. Like, I don't, like, no one's talking about Steve Nash for another coaching job. So if JJ Redick actually wants to be a coach in the NBA, take a job that's good. This Lakers job isn't good. No coach of LeBron has ever like gotten out alive, more or less. They all get fired. They all get blamed eventually for things. And so like JJ, like you have, like you, do you want your, you know, budding podcast with LeBron to just vanish? Because like, like that's a risk here too, man. Like,
yeah,
the Lakers job is going to be be a terrible thing to do. It's just, the only reason he would take it is just because it's a Lakers job, you know? And don't know. I mean,
it is hard to pass that up. Honestly, I don't think it's going to happen. Not right now. But you know, I could be wrong. I was wrong about the Timberwolves. I could be wrong about this. You know, it'll be the first time, it'll be the last.
What are they going to do? Hire JJ Redick and then draft Bronny, and then it's just going to be what kind of?
Do you really see them drafting Bronny? Honestly,
drafting, maybe not drafting. I mean, they might take him with a flyer, but I said this 2 years ago. The route for Bronny to play with LeBron is Giannis with Giannis. Like, you're going to be undrafted free agent, they'll sign you, and you're going to sit the bench indefinitely. You might see just, you know, maybe so you can throw your data an alley-oop in garbage time, but there's no way that he is anywhere close to being an NBA rotation player or whatever. He shouldn't even be in the draft, honestly. We all know this. It's ludicrous, and if they were to do Bronny and JJ, then this is just kind of this is just a full-on circus. This isn't a team. This is just an absolute circus, and maybe that's what they want because it sells tickets, but I know Lakers fans probably don't want that. They don't want to just have another throwaway season, because they were willing to do it with Kobe because they love Kobe, and they would let Kobe play, you know, for 15 more years, you know, paying $50 million a year and win, you know, 20 games. But this is
LeBron. Kobe was homegrown.
This is LeBron's, not Kobe, and they're not going to sit there and stand for this, especially when LeBron seems, you know, like his foot is always halfway out the door, or at least he's always threatening to leave, even though he's probably not going to leave. He shows up at the Cleveland game and is, oh, like, look at me at the Cleveland game. What were you doing there, LeBron? Like, you're not going to go back to Cleveland. So, like, what are you doing there other than you want to be around fans who actually like you? I don't know.
Yeah, and you're right about that because I know some Laker fans. I'm sure you do, too. A lot of them that have been Laker fans for a long time, a lot of them are even more Kobe fans, and they don't really care for LeBron. They just tolerate him because he's on their team. And, you know, it helps that he was able to help them win a championship in 2020. No matter how you look at the bubble title, they still won it. But, yeah, this whole J.J. Redick thing, I don't think it's going to happen. And then you mentioned Bronny. I watched between January through March before the tournament started, the NCAA March Madness. I probably watched 4 or 5 USC games, saw Bronny a few times. And he showed little flashes of, you know, his skill set and things he could do. But not one time did I ever really feel like, yeah, he's ready for the NBA right now, or he will be ready by next October. I just never really felt like that. I still don't feel like that. And this is before all these, you know, comments from scouts came out within the past week because of the combine, NBA draft combine. I don't think he's ready to come in and contribute to the NBA. Now, he may be ready to come in and, you know, sit on somebody's bench and learn, go play in the G League for a while, get better. I'm not saying he won't ever get to the point to where he's in the league, but I don't think he's ready right now. I mean, I think maybe at some point he might be able to get up to the level of maybe a Mike Conley. And I think Mike Conley's really good, but, you know, it took him some years to even get to where he's at. I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but I think that might now, you might think that ceiling is lower, but I think that might be because Mike Conley's never really can be considered like a top 5 point guard, but he's always been solid and really good, but never like a legit top 5 point guard. Like never really considered that in my opinion, but I've always thought he's been really good. You know what I mean?
That's pretty disrespectful to Mike Conley. Mike Conley is really good.
I know he is.
Even in college, he played one year with Greg Oden, and he was like the reason why that team was Greg Oden was the number one reason, but the reason why that team was held together at all because Mike Conley was running the point. I've liked Mike Conley since he went pro, so I think Brownie's like his high end to me is maybe like Seth Curry. Maybe a worse shooting Seth Curry,
but he can't shoot though. But that's what I'm saying. So like, he can't shoot.
And you're saying like he showed flashes, like no more than any other college basketball player who randomly gets a highlight on.
I didn't say he showed flashes of shooting. I just said he showed flashes. It wasn't a shooting.
I'm just saying, like you can watch a number of college basketball games, and you know there'll be a guy who's like, holy crap, like who did he dunk on in high school? And he'll never hear from him again. So Bronny, I think like this is just a total disservice to him. I feel bad. I honestly feel bad for him because like he's literally being set up to fail or just like look like a Nepo baby on the bench. Like it's one of the two. And like I mean maybe he's fine with that, but man,
So do you think he flames out within a couple years? Do you think he just goes and plays in the G League?
His purpose? What is his purpose once LeBron retires? Once Giannis goes, all of his brothers are going to be out of the league as well.
Oh, yeah, we already know that. We know that.
So, like, then that's like once LeBron retires, the reason why people are talking about drafting Bronny at all is to lure LeBron.
Of course.
LeBron already said, that's not going to affect my decision. Well, I don't buy that. First off, he's just saying that so no one will draft him. It's the Lakers can sign him as a free agent, but he's not. Yeah, he's nowhere near even a second round prospect. And
yeah,
and so yeah, JJ Redick, have fun. Yeah, take the Lakers job. It'll be entertaining at least.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Also, we got to look at the fact that there's not really any big names out there as far as coaches, right, for the Lakers to even go after. I'm not saying Redick's a big name, but, you know, it's getting people's attention, the fact that his name's even out there. But there's not a ton of, you know, just big-name coaches that have, you know, winning backgrounds if you were looking for like a veteran coach, not a ton of them that's really out there, you know, for the picking. So, you know, I don't really think the Reddick thing is going to happen, but I just, you know, where do they go otherwise? And, you know, I think Darvin Ham got the short end again, just like Frank Vogel did. You know, but this is the, you know, they're trying to, you know, I heard something earlier where they're trying to say that now Anthony Davis has, you know, a lot of the power, and he was the one that didn't really jive well with Darvin Ham, trying to basically, you know, take the heat off LeBron. And I'm like, do y'all just think we're stupid? This was on, it might have been on FS1 I was watching. I forget whose show it was, but I'm just like, come on, man. Any team LeBron's on, he's running the show. Stop it. Don't try to tell me that Anthony Davis is now running the show. No, stop it.
Yeah. Who convinced Anthony Davis to take that ball? I mean, like, that's like when Ben Simmons talked his agent into taking the bullet for his back surgery. Like no, we know who's to blame here. Stop telling us it's Anthony Davis. Like Anthony Davis has some kind of power. Like, he's been a pawn since he signed to,
you know, Clutch.
To Clutch. And it's like, okay, all right, well, yeah, Anthony Davis, you also, like, your value is the highest point it's ever going to be right now. And you're going to be, like, stapled to LeBron until he retires. And so, like, yeah, the Anthony Davis thing, too, is, like, he played well. He played probably the best he's looked in years. And now he's going to just, like, play with Bronny and LeBron, and, like, they'll be cool losing the first round or, like, losing in the play-in. Like, okay, guys.
What I want to see is, and I think this would be hilarious, is even if the Lakers don't draft Bronny, let's say Bronny goes undrafted, I think it's highly likely that we see them pick him up as an undrafted free agent. I want to see him trot out game one as the starting point guard with LeBron. That's what I want to see. Because I just want to show how much of a facade all this is. It's all a facade.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious to me.
The entire situation right now is just tenuous at best. And I'm talking about getting Trae Young. Like, okay, guys, like, Trae Young is only going to exacerbate all of your flaws already. So good luck.
And I mean, can they even get Trae Young? Like, what do they have to offer for Trae Young in a trade? I don't know.
This is like this is just fans with spare time using
too much.
Yeah,
too much spare time.
Photoshop. I think. I mean, last I saw, like, I saw one with DeRozan and Donovan Mitchell on the Lakers. It's like, okay, so you have those two players. Is AD still there? Like, what are we talking about here? I don't know what reality some of these fans live in, but it's clearly not one that's based in fact or with a salary cap.
Well, that's because there's nothing real. There's no reality about it. That's the problem. It's not, they don't live in reality. That's the problem there. Sean, before I get you out of here, did you see this? So Bill Spooner, former NBA referee, 32 years, I believe he's retired now. He was asked about some of the biggest assholes he had to deal with. And he said, you know, a lot of people, and I'm paraphrasing here, a lot of people, you know, would think maybe Rasheed Wallace, somebody like that. And he's like, nope. Chris Paul is one of the biggest assholes that I've dealt with. You know how I feel about Chris Paul. I'm not a big fan, never been a big fan. But what do you think it is? You think this is cap here? Like, do you think he's just holding a grudge right here, this referee?
I did see that story. Like, honestly, I read it like right before we hopped on. And that wasn't a surprise at all. I mean, that's like, we've heard that Chris Paul is difficult to deal with since he was, you know, in L.A. And, you know, he just does those Allstate commercials, so you think he's a nice guy. But, like, he's as bad as Luka with the refs. And I think the refs, I mean, honestly, like, his career maybe goes differently if he doesn't concern himself with every single altercation or foul that wasn't, or, you know, hold or whatever, and just plays the game. Maybe it turns out different, because there's clearly a ton of refs who have a grudge against CP3 and hate when he's out there. And so it's like, okay, well, like, man, maybe it's not the refs at this point. Maybe it is you, and it seems like that is the case here. So I'm not surprised. And Chris Paul, no surprise, and I, you know, I'm sure we'll get this same kind of thing here with Luka in 5 or 10 years.
You think so? Like to this extent?
Luka is, I had never seen this. Like, I've seen guys go up for a layup and think they get a foul and not run back because they're complaining to the refs. Yeah. In the series against OKC, Luka at one point thought he was fouled, but he had passed the ball, and there's still like a dribble handoff going over in the corner, and he's walking, talking to the refs while, you know, Kyrie's shooting a jumper. And it's like, I have never seen a guy in the middle of an offensive play, not even, you know, not, and they still have the ball. And it's like, yeah. Hey, man, like, what? Concern yourself with something else, man. Concern yourself
with, dude, what are you doing? It's like, bro, what are you doing? Right?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. You know how I feel. Like I said, you know how I feel about Chris Paul. He, you know, as a guy that grew up watching pro wrestling and watching Ric Flair, who was called the dirtiest player in the game, Chris Paul, if he's not the dirtiest, he's definitely up there. He's one of the dirtiest players in the game. I would vote him for probably the dirtiest, just now, maybe not the dirtiest, but he's definitely up there for the past two decades, I would say. He's definitely up towards the top for the past two decades that, you know, that he's played in. So, yeah, not surprised at all. Now, I do think there could be a little bit of a grudge from this referee. I'm not going to deny that. We know these referees and the league are sensitive when, you know, you talk, say anything about the referees, no matter what it is. So I think there may be a little bit of that going on here, too. But that doesn't mean two things can't be true. So there's that. Sean, I appreciate you again, my man, joining me this time. You know, it's always fun having you on. Definitely have to have you on again, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Appreciate it. Yep. Maybe we'll talk before the finals or after the finals. Thanks, Chris.
Oh, definitely. You know that. This has been episode 136 of the Courtside Crossover. I'm going to check y'all out real soon. Peace.